Suti Gruhe, in the maternity room, Nanu, indeed, Jagada, said, Bhavan, you, Aja, unborn Lord, now, to us, Sanchagye, you have taken birth, Iti, alas, Anuyugam, in one age after another, Nija, your own Dharma, principles of religion, Guptyai, to protect, Nana, various, Tanu, divine bodies, Gaganavat, like a cloud, Vidadhat, assuming, Jahasi, you make unmanifest, Ka, who, Veda, can understand, Abumna, of the all-pervading Supreme Lord, Urugaya, O you who are greatly glorified, Vibhuti, of the opulent expansions, Mayam, mystic deluding potency. Translation, indeed, while still in the maternity room, you told us that you, the unborn Lord, had already been born several times as our son in previous ages, after manifesting each of these transcendental bodies to protect your own principles of religion, you then made them unmanifest, thus appearing and disappearing like a cloud. O supremely glorified, all-pervading Lord, who can understand the mystic deluding potency of your opulent expansions? Purport, Lord Krishna was first born to Vasudeva and Devaki in their previous lives as Sutapa and Prishni. Later they again became his parents as Kasyapa and Aditi. This was the third time he had appeared as their son. Sukadeva Goswami said, having heard his father's words, the Supreme Lord, leader of the Satvatas, replied in a gentle voice as he bowed his head in humility and smiled. Purport, Srila Jiva Goswami describes what Lord Krishna thought after hearing his father glorifying him. Vasudeva has been honored with the eternal role of my father, and something even demigods like Brahma cannot aspire for. Therefore, he shouldn't be absorbed in thinking of my godly aspects. Moreover, his reverence greatly embarrasses me. It was to avoid this very situation that after killing Kamsa, I made a special effort to reinforce their pure parental love for me and Balaram. But now, unfortunately, the statements of these sages threaten to revive some of Vasudev's and Devaki's previous awareness of my majesty. The Supreme Lord said, my dear father, I consider your statements appropriate since you have explained the various categories of existence by referring to us, your sons. Purport, posing as Vasudeva's dependent son, Lord Krishna expresses gratitude for his father's edifying instructions. Not only I, but also you, along with my respected brother and all these residents of Dwarka, should all be considered in the same philosophical light, O best of the Yadus. Indeed, we should include all that exists, moving and non-moving. Purport, to protect his parents' intimate relationship with him, Lord Krishna stresses the oneness of all existence in this statement to his father, Vasudev. Vasudev has been reminded of his son's greatness by hearing the sages gathered at Kurukshetra, but his sense of awe was ruining his intimate parental relationship with Krishna, and therefore Krishna wanted to dispel it. We should not understand the oneness Krishna speaks of here. The subtle words of the Upanishads often mislead impersonalists into believing that all existence is ineffably one without any variety in the ultimate issue. Some Upanishadic mantras emphasize the sameness of God and His creation, while others speak about their difference. Tattvam asi, Svetaketo, you are that, O Svetaketu, for example, is an Abheda Vakya. a mantra affirming that all things are one with God, being his dependent expansions. But the Upanishads also contain many Bedavakya statements that affirm the unique distinguishing qualities of the Supreme, such as this statement, Ka evanyat ka pranyat yad esha akas anando nasyat esha evanandayati. Who would there be to activate the creation and give life to all beings if this infinite Supreme were not the original enjoyer? Indeed, he alone is the source of all pleasure. By the influence of the Supreme Lord's bewildering maya, envious, impersonalist, read the Abhedavakyas literally and accept the Vedavakyas only in a figurative way. Authoritative Vaishnava commentators, on the other hand, carefully reconcile the apparent contradictions in accordance with the interpretive principles of Vedic Mimamsa and the logically established conclusions of Vedanta. Translation, not only I, but also you, along with my respected brother and these residents of Dwarka, should all be considered in the same philosophical light. O best of the Yadus, indeed, we should include all that exists, both moving and non-moving. So, here we get a very interesting series of statements by Krishna, talking about oneness. Which is, of course, refuted in many places also. And as explained here, the whole reason is that he wants to dispel Vasudeva's consciousness of Krishna and Balaram as the Supreme Lord, putting him in a very majestic position and putting himself in a very minor role as the the servant of the Supreme Lord. Krishna prefers that Vasudeva and Devaki think of him as their child. He's more attracted to that type of affectionate relationship. So therefore, he wants to somehow deny that statement of the sages and Vasudeva that Krishna is Supreme Lord, etc. And they say, okay, everything is supreme. So in any case, the statements of the Vedas can be taken in both ways. As is pointed out in the purport, we have many statements that talk about non-difference or oneness, everything is Brahman, etc. And these are often quoted by the impersonalists to support their opinion. And of course, Shankaracharya uses these statements to support his Mayavad philosophy. So that oneness, of course, means that only Brahman exists and everything else is illusory. That's one way of taking oneness. That is Shankaracharya's strategy to say that only Brahman exists and the material world and jivas are illusory, ultimately. Another way, of course, of taking it is there's oneness, but within the oneness there is variety. So we interpret that word oneness to mean not literal oneness, absolute oneness, but a oneness in the sense that the Lord is controlling everything. So therefore, we interpret the meaning of oneness to some degree, which is permissible when there is contradictory statements involved. For instance, we have, and this of course is the strategy that persons like Madhvacharya take when he talks about everything is Brahman. Oh, it doesn't mean that absolutely everything is Brahman, but everything is under the Brahman's control. That's all. Supreme Lord controls everything, in that sense, as one with him. So in other words, a figurative or metaphorical interpretation is given to the words. On the other hand, we're said to take the direct meaning as much as possible. That's called abhida. As much as possible, we don't interpret and say it must mean that because I don't like that meaning. So as much as possible, we take the direct meaning. And where it is not possible to accept the direct meaning, then we're forced to take indirect meaning called lakshana. Because it doesn't make sense to have the direct meaning. So that is, of course, also commonly found in statements, not only in Sanskrit, but in other languages as well. We use figurative language, like in poetry, so we can't take it literally. And we use it in everyday language just to abbreviate our expression. So the example of lakshana is there's a village on the Ganga. We take it literally, then there's a village floating on top of the water. But we never say that. We say it's on the Ganga means on the bank of the Ganga. So that's the interpretation of on the Ganga. Because it doesn't make logical sense to have a village floating on the water. So that's a lakshana, but it's permissible because otherwise it contradicts our normal perceptions. Similarly, if there are contrary statements in the scriptures, then we'll have to use lakshana also. But the problem comes because the impersonalist can also say the same thing. That you have statements of duality. Well, I will take that also as lakshana. I'll take the absolute statements of oneness as absolute, and these are the real statements, and the other, I'll interpret them. The Vaishnava, on the other hand, will take all the duality statements as actual, and he'll interpret the abheda statements, oneness statements. So then there's no way of resolving the issue based on, of course, one way of doing it is to take the context of the statements and the whole section or the whole work and say just what is the author trying to present. And that way, then we can justify whether the oneness is absolute or whether the difference is absolute. So we'd have to take the context of the whole work or take the context of Vedic literatures in general and see what they say. Whether what is all one and the whole world's illusion, or whether there is difference. So, nevertheless, there's always a controversy over these statements and how to interpret them. So, of course, we see that in the Bhagavatam we do have statements of oneness, as we have statements here of oneness. But these, of course, are easily resolved because though Krishna is talking oneness here, we don't take this too seriously as an absolute statement. He's just trying to make his father give up the idea that and see Krishna as Supreme Lord, or so he has an ulterior motive here. Similarly, we find statements of Krishna in relation to the Govardhan pastime, where he speaks about karma mimamsa philosophy and how you don't have to recognize God or anything, you just do your activity and get your results for your work and enjoy in the material world. So we don't take that as absolute either, even though Krishna says this. He's just trying to convince his father to give up the sacrifice to Indra. So we will see cases by context. We see that we can reject them as absolute simply by their context. Then in the whole Bhagavatam we see the whole purpose is to present Krishna as the object of worship. So that's an absolute position the Bhagavatam is taking. As we see Narada Muni advised Veda Vyas to glorify Krishna as the object of worship and the most auspicious thing for everybody in Kali Yuga. And that is the theme of the Bhagavatam. So, if we find impersonal statements here and there, or chapters of impersonalism, like in Kapila's teachings, or in Krishna's teachings to Uddhava in the 11th canto, then we'll have to take that in the context of the whole work. The whole work is presenting Krishna, not the oneness aspect of impersonal Brahman. And we'll see, of course, many statements to support that, because we have many statements in Bhagavatam saying how impersonal liberation is much inferior to realizing the Supreme Lord. And many, many places in each canto you'll find statements like that. So, because of the wealth of contrary statements, then we have to reject the idea of oneness as an absolute thing. According to the a reasonable explanation of the Bhagavatam, and this is the mood of the Acharyas, that when they go through the Bhagavatam, they work in terms of the conclusion and then make all statements harmonious with that. Of course, the famous statement is Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. It doesn't talk about Brahman or anything. And then it also talks about Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan as three aspects of the Supreme Lord, but Bhagavan is obviously the superior one. So this is the theme of the whole Bhagavatam. So everything has to correlate with that and not be contradictory to that. So in that way we come to the conclusion. So these statements of oneness are there and difference are there. And therefore the Vaishnava Acharyas usually interpret the oneness statements in terms of difference, that it just means that they're not absolutely one, etc. So that is how Madhvacharya or Ramanujacharya will take these oneness statements. Of course, we on the other hand can use a different strategy. One is because we do accept oneness in the sense that Brahman is an aspect of the Supreme Lord, it's a realization. So a person can realize the oneness of the Lord, or oneness of everything when he gets a Brahman realization. On the other hand, the realization of Bhagavan is not invalid, it's also a valid realization, and there's no oneness, there's difference. Therefore, according to your sadhana, you get a different realization of the Lord, neither of which is invalid. But realization of Bhagavan is superior to realization of Paramatma or Brahman. So in this way, the oneness statements can be taken as an aspect of the Lord which is true, but it doesn't contradict the fact that also the Lord has qualities, there's jivas, material energy, and they're not illusory. There is a Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. So therefore we can accept the oneness statements and the difference statements in terms of different realizations. Another way, of course, in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explain this is that we should not interpret the oneness statements as most Vaishnavas will, as saying, you know, dependence, it means dependence on the Lord only. Rather, we can take them literally. Yes, the Lord is one with everything. But simultaneously, he's also different from everything. So this is the concept of Bheda-Bhed. Difference and non-difference simultaneously exist. Philosophers have presented this. Even impersonalist philosophers have presented Bheda-Bheda as one proposition. Most people will reject this. It must be either oneness or difference, because it's illogical. According to philosophical standards, oneness and difference are contrary things. So if there's variety, there cannot be oneness. If there's oneness, there cannot be variety. So it's a contradiction. So therefore, it's rejected as a logically impossible. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has solved that problem by saying the Supreme Lord has a chintya shakti by which oneness and difference can exist simultaneously in the Lord. So only the Lord exists, and the Lord exists and everything else exists simultaneously. How? Achintya Shakti of the Lord. So therefore we have the Achintya Bheda-Bheda philosophy there to explain the relationship of Lord with everything else. And this accommodates the Abheda statements, oneness statements, and the Bheda statements, the different statements, without interpreting them. We can accept oneness. We don't have to say it doesn't mean oneness, it actually means only this. So we can accept both oneness and different statements without interpretation. But, of course, when we do that, we're not accepting the absolute oneness as in Shankara's philosophy that only Brahman exists. We're simultaneously accepting that there is duality, there is Supreme Lord, jivas, and material energy. So It's not the same type of oneness in the ultimate issue. So, therefore, we do accept oneness, we do accept Brahman, but it is slightly different from the Mayavad concept of Brahman. Some similarity, but also some difference there. So in this way, there's an avoidance of interpretation, and we can have direct meaning for those words. So that was the strategy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In spite of this, we should not think that therefore Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is impersonal. No, because both Veda and Abheda are under Bhagavan, Supreme Lord, who is personal. So in one sense, we can say that the Veda and Abheda are there. Ultimately, we favor Abheda, that the Lord has a distinct form, qualities, activities, and he is different from everything else. So there is a tendency to accept that to a higher degree. So in this way, we solve the problem of having to interpret more than necessary the words of the Vedic literature. In any case, we accept the Supreme Lord having as the possessor of this Achintya Shakti, by which he can manifest these two aspects of himself, oneness and difference, for everything. Oneness and difference is, of course, a controversy, because both statements are there in the Shruti, and if we accept the Shruti, then we have to face that fact of why have contrary statements, etc. If we don't have Shruti, then of course we don't have to deal with that problem itself. Nevertheless, we have some people who believe in oneness even without Shruti. So this is a tendency of people who have come to Sattva Gun and begin to realize they're not the body but they are Atma, etc. So there's a tendency at that stage to negate difference, because differences create identity in the material world. I am a certain person, I got a body, this all this differentiation of forms, etc., as a result of Maya, which causes ultimately rebirth in the material world, karma, and suffering. So we want to get rid of all that, so let's get rid of all the difference. So that is a natural, we could say, rather natural tendency for people who are observing the material world. Maybe a logical conclusion from their point of view. It's logical, though from an absolute point of view, not. But from their point of view, it looks a little logical to get rid of all the difference, because this is causing problems in the world. We identify ourselves with our body and this and that and other people and whatever. We look at the object of enjoyment. This is all due to difference. Let's get rid of all the differences and end up with this state of peace where there's no differentiation at all. So such people, they gravitate towards that Brahman type of realization. As I said, it is not rejected by the Bhagavatam. It is a valid aspect of the Supreme Lord. Not in the sense that Shankaracharya presents it, that only Brahman exists and there's nothing else there, but it is one aspect of the Lord. So we give examples to show how it exists in the Lord, but it is also a secondary aspect of the Lord. So one example is the sun and the rays of the sun. So the rays of the sun are something like the Brahman. And the sun itself, we can say, is Supreme Lord. So he has a form, qualities, activities, and the rays are just, we can say, impersonal. They don't have a particular form or whatever like that. So that is one way of presenting it. Nevertheless, we also see that the rays are dependent on the sun. So Brahman is dependent on the Lord. So we often use the analogy or the metaphor that the Brahman is the effulgence of the Lord. We can say it's not we can't take it literally, because if they give a light with a light bulb or a sun with rays, that's a material example. But something like that, the Brahman is an aspect of the Lord where if you just take that Brahman, then you don't see the Lord at all. So you take the light and the effulgence of the Lord, then you don't see the Lord, you just see the effulgence. But it is related to the Lord.
and dependent on the Lord. So therefore, Brahman is not an independent entity for the Vaishnava. It exists, but is dependent on ultimately Supreme Lord, who is the source of that Brahman. So therefore, if we have the Brahman as a dependent entity, therefore it's not the Supreme ultimately. It's only related to the Supreme Lord. So better we realize the actual form of the Lord who gives rise to that Brahman effulgence. In terms of logic, of course, it is to get higher knowledge rather than accept the light, we get the source of the light. Just sunlight, don't study the sunlight, but study the sun. In terms of experience, of course, then we get also a higher experience of bliss. We get an experience of bliss from Brahman in comparison to our experience in the material world, because we're free of all the problems we have in the material world, limitations, etc. So that in itself is a type of bliss. But the bliss in relation to Bhagavan is superior. It's what we call prema. That's the highest bliss. Because it involves a recognition of the Lord with his qualities and activities, etc. And also we have a relationship with the Lord. So that type of bliss is preferred. It's a higher type of bliss. So though Brahman is part of the Lord, is also a minor factor of the Lord, and the devotees therefore ignore that in favor of worshipping Bhagavan.
The object of love rather than the object of worship.
Well, worship here we mean love. Because worship means, what does worship mean? We analyze worship. What does it consist of? It may consist of praising the Lord, offering prayers, offering obeisances, offering items, as we do in deity worship, all these things. So it may involve kirtan, it may involve offerings to the deity like archana, etc. A remembrance of the Lord in the favorable way. So all this becomes bhakti. And it's offered with affection. If it's not offered with affection, we don't call it bhakti. So the definition of bhakti, it's anukulyena krishna anusilanam. With favorability, with affection. So that's the very nature of all worship. It should be like that. Of course, people can worship just out of duty and not, but then that's more or less empty. So when we talk about worship, we mean ultimately there's devotion there.
When they talk about the love of the gopis, then the object of Krishna love for the gopis. There is a, the object of Balaram explaining the love of the gopis.
Yeah. Again, we can say it's a type of worship. It's also a worship of sense, in a sense. But usually when we talk about worship also, then we also connect that with Vaidhi Bhakti to a large degree. Whereas if we go to Raganuga or to Bhava or Prema, then that Vaidhi aspect becomes less and less. So the affectionate aspect becomes more and more. But in any case, we can say that all affectionate relationships are a type of worship in one sense, because we recognize the wonderful qualities in that person, and therefore we offer things to him, even the self.
How to accept this oneness and this idea like Jiva is one with the Supreme Lord, because Mayavadi, they give this idea. One is the Supreme Lord, but we don't accept this oneness. How to accept Jiva is one with the Supreme Lord? How to accept this idea?
Who?
Like Mayavadi normally say that, and Lord both are one.
So how do Vaishnavas accept it?
How Vaishnava accept this idea?
Oh, the Vaishnava accepts oneness because the Jiva comes from the Tatashta Shakti, and matter comes from the Bahiranga Shakti. And the Shaktis are one with the Lord, and that's non-different from the Lord. In that sense, they're one with the Lord. because the Shakti and the Shaktiman are non-different. So that's the oneness. But we also accept the difference, and of course we accept the predominance of the difference over the oneness. But nevertheless, we can say it's one. The Lord is everything, because the Shakti, the Jiva Shakti, and the Bahiranga Shakti are one with the Lord.
So that means whatever is in the material world, everything is one with the Supreme Lord. If you take the Shakti Tattva.
Yeah. Because it's Shakti of the Lord.
Yeah.
And the Shakti is one with the Lord. So therefore, it's one with the Lord. In that sense.
But even in oneness, there is a variety also. In oneness also, there is a variety.
Well, we're saying the Shakti is one with the Lord, but we're saying that we're not saying the Shakti doesn't exist. Mayavad says there is no Shakti, there's nothing, only Brahman. And that the idea of a jiva or material energy is an illusion, it doesn't exist at all. So when we talk about oneness, as I said, it doesn't mean the absolute oneness of the impersonalist, because we do have difference also. So the difference is, the Shakti is different from the Lord, the oneness is, the Shakti and the Shaktiman are non-different. In that sense, the oneness is there.
And what about the manifestation of the material world? Is not the expression of His Shakti? They don't accept this? The material world is the expression of His energy.
Correct? Yeah.
They don't accept this.
Cool.
Mayavadi, because...
No, it's illusory. There's no energy. Only Brahman. There's no energy in Brahman.
But still, it's Brahman, but how Brahman can manifest something without having energy?
It doesn't manifest anything. It's all illusory. There is no manifestation of the world. Something that doesn't exist is not manifest. If I say there's a book over here, it's not a real book, so it's not manifested. Nothing is manifested. The whole world is illusion. It's like a big dream. It doesn't exist. So only Brahman exists.
So if that is the case, if they accept that, the world is illusory, so that means, and jiva also become illusory then?
Huh?
Jiva.
It's illusory.
Jiva is illusory.
Yeah. So therefore, if we get knowledge, we become Brahman.
If you accept that, then that means, some part of, if jiva is a part, and afterwards it merges into the Brahman with the Supreme Lord, that means there is some part of the Lord is contaminated.
Yes.
Some part of the Lord is contaminated. If jiva is contaminated, jiva is contaminated, that's there in the material world.
Yeah.
It's a part of the Supreme Lord, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, that means some part of the Lord is contaminated.
Well, they have different theories that the jiva is a reflection of Brahman, or it's cut off piece of Brahman, or something like that. But of course, we defeat all those arguments. How can that take place? Because Brahman is perfect. How can it be cut into bits? How can there be a reflection of Brahman? If a reflection needs a medium, but there's nothing else except Brahman, so it can't reflect on anything. So they have a problem in saying that the jiva is, the Brahman under illusion or ignorance, because where did the ignorance come from, etc. There's some problem in their explanation, that's all. Which the Vaishnavas attack in many ways.
That means, according to them, if Lord is avikara, no transformation, that means it becomes vikara. Vikara means there is a transformation of the Lord. Yeah.
There should be no transformation. It should be always unchanging.
That means if jiva is a Lord, that means how can there is a change in the Lord?
There isn't. It's only an illusion of change. That's what they call the vivartavad. Thinking something, thinking what it isn't. So we think that we are existing. That's the vivarta, that's the transformation, but actually it doesn't exist. But then we have to say, how does that transformation take place? And that's the problem that they come to. How do the ignorance arise? They have difficulty explaining that. So they have different theories like reflection or cutting off a piece of Brahman, etc. But they're all attacked by the Vaishnava Acharyas as being invalid arguments.
The material elements up to Bhagavan level. But whereas we see that Prabhupada often and mostly keeps deriding only the Brahman aspect of it. He doesn't even talk about people who are celebrating God as the material elements or anything else.
Well, I think those are minor factors. Probably the major spiritual influence in the modern world, if they are spiritual, is impersonalism. So that's why he attacks that more than others. And in other ages, like Lord Chaitanya's time and previously, the main philosophical thing was Shankara's philosophy, so therefore that gets attacked by the Vaishnavas more than anything else. Of course, we'll find that there's attack on Karma Mimamsa in the Bhagavatam and by the Acharyas also. Other different theories are also attacked, but the Shankara's philosophy became very prominent, and therefore Madhvacharya, for instance, spent a long time counteracting that. And same with Ramanujacharya, because that was the main philosophy that came out. Even though there's other types of impersonal philosophy like Sankhya, etc., they pay minor attention to those in comparison to Shankara's philosophy.
But Guru Maharaj, actually the aspect of Brahman realization is to be considered in the mode of Sattva Guna or ignorance?
Yes, Sattva.
Son of Brahman Raj Ki Jai.